Always an honor to be here tonight. I thank God for a pastor who leads by example. He's home tonight ministering to his own family. And how many of you know that's necessary? Absolutely. But we're going to pick up right where he left off. We're in the middle of a series called Boss, Building Our Success Scripturally. You know, as Christians, we have to set an example for the world. Not only can we be Christian and be successful, I would argue that as Christians, by following the principles of the Bible, we should be more successful than the world. We have tools to use in our toolbox given to us from the Bible that can put us a step ahead, that can take us a step ahead, that can position us for promotion in life. We're not working for the man, we're working for the man. And when you've got your heart in that place, that's when things happen. That's when special things happen. That's when special anointings happen. That's when promotions happen out of nowhere. That's when we get these testimonies of people that amazing healings happen or amazing financial blessings happen. Because when you line everything up with him, that's where it's at. And we're talking about attitudes of achievers. Attitudes of achievers. An attitude is a settled way of thinking that is reflected in a person's behavior, a settled way of thinking that is reflected in a person's behavior. As a man thinks, so is he. Our behaviors will follow our thought process. That's why it's so important that we check our attitudes. Because if we allow a bad attitude or a sour attitude for too long in our lives, eventually we're going to start to act on those things. I've gotten to a place now where I can be talking to my wife and I'll just say to her, hey, I have a bad attitude about this situation. I've begun to recognize within myself when I'm having a bad attitude. And I do that because I know I need to change that. If I continue to go on with that situation with a bad attitude, then my actions are going to follow it. And then I'm no longer in God's will on that situation. And Pastor outlined 13 points in this series. And we're just going to review them super fast tonight. And then I'm going to add the 14th attitude of achievers. The first is just attitude. The attitude you choose determines whether you win or lose. You get to choose your attitude. Attitude is a choice. Attitude is not what's happened to you. Attitude is how you respond to the circumstances around you. Everything that has to do with attitude is under your control. It's within your sphere of influence. And you can't think like a loser and live like a winner. You can't think like a loser and live like a winner because your actions follow your thought process. And I always like to use the example of my acquaintance, Mike Newell. Now, most of you know, if I mention Mike at all when I have a microphone, 9 times out of 10 it's to make fun of Mike. But this is the one exception where I'm not going to make fun of Mike. Mike, why don't you stand up so everybody can see how beautiful you look in your Eagle sweatshirt tonight. Mike has been a diehard Eagles fan as long as I've known him. He is so excited for the Super Bowl right now. You should see him in his Randall Cunningham pajamas. It's incredible. Mike preached a message a couple years ago, and I've never forgot this, and he'll roll his eyes because I use this all the time. But he said, when he wakes up in the morning, he said, when I get out of bed, I tell myself I'm a winner. When I get out of bed, I tell myself I'm a winner. And do you still do that? She does it for me. She does it for you. Hey, see, he's got his wife trained to do it for him. There we go. Husbands, take note of that. He said, every time I get up, I tell myself I'm a winner. Well, why is that? Because as his line of thinking begins to meditate on him being a winner, then his actions and his behaviors will follow. Now I'm going to embarrass Mike a little bit because one thing you don't know about Mike is that his trajectory for as long as I've known him has been this. He hasn't always enjoyed his circumstances. He hasn't gone to work every day saying, yippee, I love my job. But it's funny how every time they lay off at his plant, Mike gets promoted. You know what? It's funny every time other people are given pink slips, they say, not you, Mike, you're going on up. Because he's a winner. He knows he's a winner. He believes he's a winner. And as he thinks, his actions follow. So that's the only nice thing I'm going to say about you, Mike. We're going to let it go from there. Number two tonight is loyalty. Loyalty is unswerving allegiance. Loyalty simply means that when I'm on the clock, you get my best. And I have a practical story. This just happened last week. I have a German Shepherd puppy. He's a year and a half. I still call him a puppy because he's got the body of a big dog, but he's got the brain of a dopey dog. And they are wonderful dogs, but they're slow maturing dogs. And our dog, he's a German Shepherd, and his name is Shepherd. And you can thank me for that, for my creativity. But he's very scheduled. We're still trying to get him scheduled, regimented, I guess what you call it, potty trained for a dog, whatever. But we found that if we feed him in the morning, we feed him in the evening, if we let him out about an hour after he eats, we have success. He'll go out, he'll do his duty, we're fine. If we miss that scheduled appointment time, a lot of times we'll end up with a present and not the good kind. And of course, when that happens a couple days in a row, I start to get bent out of shape because I don't take that real well for my dogs. I want to train them and get them to where they're supposed to be. So last Thursday, it's my job to let him out in the morning. So I let him out in the morning before I'm ready to come here to church. Jen's already gone with the kids. And I put him in his pen, tell him to do his thing. He doesn't do anything. He's walking around, sniffing, walking around, sniffing, walking around, sniffing. 5 minutes go by, and I'm like, it's getting cold out here, but whatever. 10 minutes go by. Now I'm starting to get a little annoyed because I know if he doesn't keep his scheduled appointment, then I'm going to have a present waiting for me later. 15 minutes go by, and finally, I got to leave. It's time for me to get in my truck and come over here to the church. So I am just torqued at this dog. So I get him out of the pen. I start scolding him and berating him, and you're a bad dog, and get in the house and get in your crate. And he's in there with his ears back and his tail down, and he's whining because he knows I'm mad at him. We have an older dog. I shut the crate. I bring the older dog over, start feeding him treats right in front of the crate, and walk out the door without giving Shepherd any treats whatsoever. How do you know we're going to be real tonight? And I get in my truck, I'm driving to work, and I get a text from my wife right at this moment. It says, oh, by the way, I let Shepherd out this morning and he pooped. So now I feel terrible because I just berated this dog and I'm on my way to work. So then I, you know, work the day. I come home, I walk in the door and I see this dog. And what do you think his greeting to me was? Daddy, you're home! It starts licking me and jumping and everything. That's loyalty. That's unswerving allegiance. And then to top off the story, the very next day after I've berated this dog and fed treats to his brother right in front of him and gave him nothing, I had to up to Sam's Club. I get home. I'm carrying groceries into the house, and I've got the dog out with me. My arms are full. And two houses down, one of our neighbors has a pit bull. Well, whatever happened, pit bull got loose, and he came tearing down to my property line. He's all barking and growling, and I'm here with my arms full. As soon as that pit bull crossed our property line, my little German Shepherd made a beeline for him, grabbed him by the neck, and dropped him. Just like, boom, didn't even hesitate. Then I called his name. He came right back to my side, and that pit bull went running. And his master's all red-faced and yelling at him, and he took care of it. But, you know, if that had been a human, that would have said, hey, you did me wrong yesterday. Now you're about to get yours, son. That pit bull is all you. But not a dog. Loyalty is unswerving allegiance. So there's a nugget for you tonight. Number three, humility. Humility is winning favor with other people by happily serving them. Winning favor with other people by happily serving them. Humility is the ultimate display of love. Humility is selflessness. It's putting other people in front of ourselves. Humility is when we have our own plan, our own agenda, our own idea of what we want to do, and that plan gets changed, and we still humbly serve. That's humility. That's something I'm sure we all could use a dose of that in our lives. We could all pray to God for a dose of that. Number four tonight is faithfulness. Faithfulness is using what we've been given to produce increase where we are. Using what we've been given to produce increase where we are. You know, Josh always says the reward for a job well done is another job to do. As Christians, it doesn't just end. You don't just get a job and say, okay, it's done. Now we're going to go live at the beach for the rest of our lives. No, when you do something for God and you do it well, God gives you something else to do. That's why every time you're pressing into God, every time you're on fire for God, it seems like the problems of the world all come to you. The people of the world who have problems are all drawn to you because you've got something they need, and God's sending them your way because you've been faithful in the small things. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in a few things. Now I'll make you ruler over many things. Number five tonight is integrity. Integrity is placing a higher value on our character than on momentary pleasure, temporary gain, or short-term convenience. What are you doing when no one's looking? What are you thinking about when no one's looking? What are you dreaming about when no one's looking? What are you looking at on your computer when no one's looking? Integrity. How does your decision-making process, does it change when nobody's looking, or does it remain consistent all the way through? That's integrity. We could all use a dose of that in Jesus' name too. Number six, trustworthiness. Being worthy of confidence, dependable, able to be relied upon. You know, it's a great comfort to me that I've got some trustworthy people I can count on. I can hardly contain myself. I'm so excited. On Monday, we're leaving for vacation. I can't wait. So that's one of the great things about leaving the classroom, Amy Pouts, is we vacation in the winter. It's cheaper. It's great. I'm going to Florida. You're staying here. It's going to be fantastic. So, and not that you wanted to know all this, but this is like my Captain Ahab moment. Many of you know last year we attempted to take our children to Walt Disney World, and it was the nightmare trip. We saved up all year for this trip. And then our kids got the stomach bug at Walt Disney World. Gwendolyn threw up on me on the airplane, which thank God it was Gwendolyn, because I don't know if it's just her, if it's girls in general, but when Gwendolyn throws up, it's kind of like just bloop. And it was just right on my arm, and I'm looking around, nobody noticed, and we just kind of keep it quiet. Had it been Simon, it would have been like a 5-alarm fire, and the whole plane would know, attention everyone, I have just vomited. But thankfully, it was Gwendolyn. It was very quiet. But on my vacation last year, I pulled 2 all-nighters. I got to visit an Orlando emergency room at midnight so my little girl could get an IV drip. We canceled over 50% of the activities we had planned. And, you know, praise God, all that. And we come back, and it gets to be about May. And I'm just like, I just can't handle this, Jen. I said, this is just doesn't sit right with me. So we saved up for 9 months, and we're going back again, and we're leaving Monday, and I'm excited. It's going to be a blessed trip, and pray for the trip. I've been praying for it. If you're sick, stay away from my kids, and it's going to be great. And I said all that to say this, trustworthiness. While I'm gone, I've got two people that I trust so much. One of them sitting back here with his lovely wife, Ron Huff. He's going to provide music for you. Mandy Crane, she's going to provide music for you while I'm gone. And I am so blessed to have people that I can trust. And what that means is when I hand things off to Ron and I hand things off to Mandy, I don't worry about it at all, because I know it's going to be done either at the same level or better than what I would do. And that just gets me excited. Give Ron a hand. I don't want to get his ego too big, but I learn from that man all the time. He is a wealth of musical knowledge. Number seven tonight, good reputation. Reputation is what people know you for. Reputation comes from the consistent manifestation of our character. It's a consistent manifestation of our character. You know, people are watching. People are watching everything you do. And as soon as you tell people you're a Christian, you better believe they're going to be watching even more, because now they want to point out every little thing that you haven't brought into sanctification quite yet. People are watching you. You know, there's a quote that says the reputation of 1,000 years can be destroyed in a single moment. Not to get too somber tonight, but many of you know I'm a Penn State graduate. I love Penn State. Penn State, Penn State, Penn State. I've got Penn State all over my office. I mean, Penn State. You know, one of my childhood icons is Joe Paterno. Love that man. He's done so much good. He's helped so many people. He gave millions of dollars out of his pocket to build a library. He's helped so many young men become quality citizens and senators and all kinds of things. But that's not what he's going to be remembered for. That's not what people are going to know him for anymore. At one point, yes, but not anymore, because your reputation comes from the consistent manifestation of our character. Attitudes towards those over us. Number 8 tonight, stay submitted to authority. That's fun. Stay submitted to authority. How many people love having a boss? Right. Submission is yielding one's option of leading to another in order to follow. Submission is more than just outward compliance. It's an attitude of the heart. One of the things that Josh always talks about is he always says, don't get married to your idea. Your idea isn't you. When you have this great idea and you take it and you present it to your boss and they say no, they're not saying you stink. They're just saying that we don't want to go with that idea. Don't get married to your idea. There's a great book on this subject called Undercover by John Bevere that I read, but it is a dangerous, dangerous book. Do not read that book. That's not Sunday afternoon reading with a cup of tea. That's the type of book that I was red-faced by the end of the second chapter, ready to scream at the author if I ever met him, but not because he wasn't right, just because I didn't want to hear what he had to say. But his whole book was talking about staying submitted to authority, and staying submitted to authority, not just when they're good authorities, but when they're bad authorities, not just when they treat you well, but even when they don't. It's an incredible book, and it's also one of the keys to being blessed by God. Number 9 tonight, be teachable. Teachable people have no problem receiving and following directions. You know, I encourage everyone to become lifelong learners. Don't ever get to a point where you have nothing left to learn. Just continue to challenge yourself. Continue to challenge your thought processes. Number 10, be accountable. You know, everybody needs to be accountable to somebody. Be required to explain your actions and decisions to someone. Subject to giving account. Successful people expect to be inspected. Josh says that to me all the time. He says, inspect what you expect. Inspect what you expect. If you ask somebody to do something, inspect whether it's been done. Inspect what you expect. Number 11 tonight, this is attitudes towards the work that we do. Number 11, be diligent. Diligence, which is careful and continued hard work. This is your work ethic. You know, one thing I will say about folks in Bradford County, work ethic is a high point here. A lot of people that I meet, excellent work ethic in this community in general. I think that's probably because of the agricultural heritage. But work ethic is, if I were going to talk about Bradford County, about the highlights of Bradford County, work ethic would be one of the things I'd bring up. But as a believer, we work differently than non-believers because we work for Jesus himself. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, whatever you do, do it for the glory of God. Believers think of the big picture when doing little things. Number 12, be consistent. Consistent means always the same. I love Hebrews 13:8. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. You get the same Jesus every single time you go to him. Now, you might go to him for different reasons, but you get the same Jesus every time. You know, your employer is counting on you to reproduce consistent results day after day. Number 13, personal discipline. The most important person you can lead is you. Without self-discipline, success is impossible. Look, you're not always going to like everything in life. You're not always going to be treated fair. Sorry. Things aren't always going to go the way that you planned, but perseverance is forged through hardship. Tenacity is taught through tough times. We need to learn to embrace the grind. I remember a few years ago, Josh did a sermon called Going for the Gold. And I remember him telling the story of an Olympic wrestler. And I just thought of this because the Olympics are coming up here in a few weeks. And this Olympic wrestler trained for 4 years to win the gold medal, and he did. And they interviewed him, and they're like, what was the key to your success? How did you get to the point that you could win this gold? And he said, I learned to embrace the grind. I learned how to embrace the grind. I learned how to get up every single day and discipline myself and train myself day after day after day. And that guy did it for four years. He probably was doing it for 20 years to get to that point, but he learned to embrace the grind. That takes personal discipline. Without self-discipline, success is impossible. And number 14 tonight, now we're into new material, passion. Passion is the attitude point we're going to talk about tonight. Passion is an enduring conviction that you're doing something for God with eternal significance. Passion is an enduring conviction that you're doing something for God with eternal significance. Passion is where your spirit and your soul connect. It's where the rubber meets the road in your life. Passion is found in the unity of your purpose. When you know that you know that you know that you're living in the dead center of God's will for your life, passion lives at that place. Passion is never past tense. It can't be. If passion is born out of your purpose, then to say, I used to have passion would be like the same as saying, I used to have purpose. I used to exist. I used to be a person. The fact is, you do have a purpose. Even if you lose sight of it every now and again, you still have purpose. Passion makes you a people magnet. Passion draws people to you. Passion makes people want to be around you. It's infectious. Passion can't be taught. It can only be caught. Talent doesn't draw people. Sure, talent might catch your attention for a little while, but talent doesn't draw people in. You may be good at something. Maybe you're a singer, but someone out there can sing better. Maybe you're a teacher, but someone out there can teach better. Maybe you're a great communicator. Someone out there can communicate better. People aren't drawn to you because you have talent. They're drawn to you because you have passion. That's what passion is. Here's what passion isn't. Passion doesn't mean emotional. Passion is far bigger than our emotions. Sometimes our passion spills out through our emotions. But emotions do not define our passion. Passion doesn't mean yelling. Passion isn't a volume level. Passion is focus. Passion is drive. Passion is unfaltering determination. What do passionate people look like? Passionate people don't mail it in. One of my favorite chapters in the New Testament is a day in the life of Jesus Christ as recorded in Matthew chapter 8. And just check this out with me tonight. It says, here we have Jesus. He just delivered the greatest sermon of all time, which was the Sermon on the Mount, which is in the three chapters preceding this. And it says, when he had come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. He just got done preaching. He just had the greatest Sunday morning of all time. And behold, a leper came and worshiped him, saying, Lord, if you're willing, you can make me well. You can heal me. You can make me clean. So here we are. Jesus just preaches this sermon. He comes down the mountain. He could have mailed it in. After such an energetic service, nobody would have faulted Jesus for, you know, just kind of going on his way. But he didn't mail it in. He healed that leper. Then as he's moving on from that place, a centurion meets him. Now, when Jesus entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him, pleading with him, saying, Lord, my servant is lying at home, paralyzed and dreadfully tormented. And Jesus came to him and said, I will heal him. So here we are. Jesus meets this centurion. He could have absolutely mailed this one in. This centurion wasn't even a Jew. But what does he do? He heals the servant. Same day, fast forward. Jesus shows up at Peter's house. Said he came into Peter's house. He saw Peter's wife's mother lying sick with a fever. And all the men are saying, just leave her that way. Not Jesus. So he touched her hand and the fever left her. So Jesus just preached the world's greatest sermon, healed a leper, healed the servant of a centurion. Certainly could have mailed it in from there. Nope. He touches her and heals her. And then finally, end of the day, when evening had come, they brought to him many who were demon-possessed. He cast out the spirits with a word and healed all who were sick. So here we are, Jesus. He just does all these wonderful things. He gets his feet up in his lazy boy recliner. He's ready to catch the new episode of The Bachelor or Street Outlaws or whatever big game is on. And up rolls the whole neighborhood unannounced with their sick and demon-possessed friends. Somebody's sister throws up all over his porch. Surely in this situation, Jesus could have given him the Jehovah's Witness treatment, right? Dim the lights, hide behind the couch, and just wait till they're gone. That's not what Jesus did. He healed all that were sick. What drives a person to keep doing that? Passion. Passion is what drives someone to keep doing that. Passion is caught as much as it's taught. Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. Passionate people surround themselves with other passionate people. Passion rubs off on you. Acts 4:13, now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John were a couple of fishermen who got arrested, and they started telling off the Pharisees. They're like, look, man, we're going to tell you how it is. It says they perceived that they were uneducated, untrained men, and they realized they had been with Jesus. That passion rubbed off on those disciples. Passionate people age, but their passion doesn't expire. You can grow old, but you can't allow your passion to grow old. You must remain passionate or you'll cease to be effective. I like this quote from George Bernard Shaw. It says, you don't stop playing because you get old. You grow old because you stop playing. Passionate people endure through hard times. Without passion, you have no reason to get up. You have no reason to go on. How do we handle those difficult moments, those critical moments in life when everything is at stake, when everything you believe in is shaken to the core? How do you handle those moments? I think about Nehemiah, who went back to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls of the city. And every step of the way, people were against him. They wanted to kill him. They wanted to kill the workers. I mean, at least most of us don't have to worry about getting killed at our jobs. I mean, praise God if you're law enforcement and military. I pray for you almost every single day, but most of us don't have to worry about being killed at our jobs. And Nehemiah led these people to build this wall, and it said that they were working with tools in one hand and holding a sword in the other hand. What keeps somebody going through that point? It says that they stayed in the city so that they could be workers by day and that they could be guards by night. When are they sleeping? If you're working all day and guarding all night, what keeps a person doing that day after day, week after week, month after month? Passion. How do I identify my passion? With three questions. What gets you up? What keeps you going? And what keeps you from quitting? If you want to know what your passion is right now in your life, what gets you out of bed in the morning? What keeps you going when the day gets rough? And what keeps you from quitting? Whatever the answer to that question is, that's your passion. That's your passion right now. That doesn't mean your passion can't change. If your passion isn't what you want it to be, don't beat yourself up. You're just identifying your passion. What gets you up in the morning? What keeps you going? What keeps you from quitting? It's when we lose sight of our passion that life beats us down. What is it day after day that keeps us going? Look, there's no amount of talent. There's no amount of intellect. There's no amount of money without passion that can answer those questions. You can't fake passion. Passion has to be bigger than our problems. Everybody has problems. Your passion is bigger than your problems. It's why you keep going. The day that your problems get bigger than your passion is the moment that you get overwhelmed and cease to be effective. That's when you stop surviving and start thriving. We've all had days like that where we're just trying to hold on to the end. I'm not talking about that. But when that becomes a lifestyle of every day, just trying to survive, you've lost sight of your passion. You've lost sight of what it is that gets you up every single day. Your passion has to be bigger than your problems. So what are passion killers? I've got four passion killers. The first is life without margins. Margins are the open spaces on a page that are intentionally left unoccupied. You know, we don't even think about them. But without margins, everything would run together. There'd be no separation. You wouldn't be able to tell where one sentence ended and another begins. Margins are a healthy separation. Passion that has no margin will break down. What do I mean by that? I can't be passionate about everything. I can't be passionate about everything, but I can be passionate about a few things. You can't successfully navigate life being passionate about every cause and every situation that you encounter. You need to narrow down your focus. If you live an unfocused, undisciplined life, you won't be able to sustain passion. Number two passion killer tonight is work without renewal. Now here's the flip side, Bradford County, of your rock star work ethic. If you take it too far, it's a passion killer. Work without renewal. You know, part of your margins needs to be time to recharge and renew. Romans 12:2 says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." We have to renew. You know, sometimes a job is just work. That's okay. There's things that we have to do. There's daily chores that we can't get around that have no spiritual significance to them. There's no spiritual significance about taking out the trash. If you don't do it, my house will stink. There's the significance of taking out the trash. But we need to build margins into our lives to refresh, refill, and refuel, or we'll burn out. Number three passion killer tonight. Expectation without reality. Expectation without reality. I mean, we hear a lot of great sermons in this place, but you ever hear a great sermon that addresses several areas of your life that you want to change, and you leave saying, "All right, I've got 10 things I need to fix, and I'm going to start fixing every last one of them right now. First thing tomorrow, I'm going to fix them all." And then 3 days later, you're sitting on your couch having a counseling session with Ben and Jerry saying, "Why am I such a failure?" It's because you had an expectation without reality. Josh has a great saying. He always says, "Eat the hay and spit out the sticks." That means not everything you see, hear, or think is for this very moment. Expectation without reality, really, it's a lack of focus. Lack of focus is a passion killer big time. The more we dissipate our lives, the less effective we can be. The less effective we are, the more depressed we become about our outlook for the future. What we really need to do is pick a few things that we can do with excellence. Pick a few things that we can fix now and let the other things for another time. Beware of the comparison trap. It's dangerous to compare your life and experiences to other people. It's far better to be you and excel at one thing than to try to be somebody else and excel at nothing. You can't do everything. Our expectations always need to be realistic. Stick to what you're called to do. Without realistic expectations, we become disappointed. Number four, passion killer tonight, activity without vision. A major passion killer is losing sight of the vision, losing sight of what we were called to do. Jesus commends the church at Ephesus by telling them in Revelation chapter 2, he says, "I know your works, your labor, your patience, that you cannot bear those who are evil, that you have tested those who say they are apostles and are not and have found them to be liars. You have persevered and have patience and have labored for my name's sake and have not become weary." All great stuff. I could only wish that Jesus would say that to me. But then he goes on to say, "Nevertheless, I have this against you, that you have left your first love. Remember, therefore, from where you have fallen, repent and do the first works, or else I will come to you quickly and remove your lampstand from its place unless you repent." You're doing all this stuff great, but you lost your first love. You lost sight of your vision. How many of you know that you can do the right things with wrong intentions? The church at Ephesus lost sight of the vision. Sure, what they were doing looked good on the surface, but it didn't look good in the heart. And that's what mattered the most. So how do we maintain our flame? Those are passion killers. How do we maintain? How do we stir everything up? How do you keep your passion burning strong? Number one tonight, you got to stay close to the flame. Ron, you like to be warm. You got to stay close to the fire. If you don't have something burning inside of you, you're too far from the fire. If you're losing your passion, You're too far from the fire. Get closer to the fire. Most people don't need a new teaching or new information. They need to keep proximity to what they've already heard. A fire doesn't always need more wood. Sometimes it just needs to be stirred up. 1 John 2:7-8 says, "Dear friends, I'm not writing a new commandment for you. Rather, it's an old one that you've heard from the very beginning. This old commandment to love one another is the same message you heard before, yet it is also new." Sometimes we just have to re-stir up the message we already have and stay close to the flame. You don't need new direction. You just have to go back to following the old direction again. You know, write your vision down. Go back to it time and time again for the encouragement that you need. Our love for God has to exceed everything else. Passion trumps education. It trumps skill level. It trumps personality. It trumps our background. Number two tonight, keeping our passion going. Number two tonight, swim in your lane. As a swimmer who's swimming in a race, you have to stay in your lane. If you get out of your lane, you'll be penalized or disqualified. You'll ultimately lose the race. In order to maintain your passion, you have to do what you're meant to do. In the book of Acts chapter 6, it says, "Now in those days when the number of the disciples was multiplying, there arose a complaint against the Hebrews by the Hellenists because their widows were neglected in the daily distribution. Then the 12 summoned the multitude of the disciples and said, 'It is not desirable that we should leave the word of God and serve tables.'" Now note this, it's not because we're not willing to. It's not because we're above doing that. It's because that isn't our lane. That would be an inefficient use of our time and resources. "Therefore, brethren, seek out from among you 7 men of good reputation." See, it's all about people. It's all about reaching as many people as we can. There's people that you can reach that I can never reach. No matter how hard I try, I won't, but you can. But there's people that I can reach that you could never reach. That's why we need each other. That's why we have to stay in our own lanes. When I stay in my lane and you stay in your lane, then we're a team and we're functioning together and we can go so much farther like that. We can have so much greater impact. Number three tonight, to stir up the flame, focus on your 5%. Focus on your 5%. 85% of what you do in a given day is menial. It's stuff that anybody could do. 10% of what you do in a given day is something that with the same training you had, anybody could do. It's that 5%. There's 5% of your life that only you can do. 5% of your life can't be delegated or accomplished by anyone else. Only I can cultivate a dynamic relationship with Jesus Christ. Nobody else can do that for me. Only I can be a rock star husband to my wife. I can't delegate that. Nobody else can do that for me. Only I can be a top-notch dad leading and directing my family. I can't delegate that. Chris Thorne, I can't hire you to come do that for me. I have to do that myself. Only I can fulfill the individual plan that God has for my life. Only I can choose to live a pure, moral, and healthy lifestyle. And only I can take the time to enjoy the people who choose to do life with me. Focus on the 5%.